These days, we see all kinds of stuff flying around the sky. Planes, drones, satellites. But one thing we don't see quite as often anymore are balloons, zeppelins, and airships. I mean, they used to be everywhere. So if these things were so popular, why don't we see as many balloons in the sky today? From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. The show that takes you deep into the cosmos or just to the telescope in your backyard to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is Ohio Newsroom journalist Kendall Crawford with a story of an airship crash that defined a rural Midwestern town. But first, let's go back a bit. Paris, France, 1783. The Montgolfier brothers, Joseph Michel and Jacques Étienne, they designed the first balloon to carry passengers aloft. And by the way, they were not the passengers. But soon, bigger and better balloons followed as aeronauts tried to outdo each other in distance, height, and sheer brazenness. This was daredevil kind of stuff, and the crowds went wild for these flights. But aeronauts in the late 1700s and early 1800s didn't tend to fly for very long. It wasn't too long after this that the first air disaster happened. This was in Ireland in 1785 when a balloon caught fire, crashed, and destroyed 100 homes. Sophie Blanchard, who I'd like to dedicate an entire episode to in the future, she ascended in her first balloon in 1804 with her husband. This was Jean-Pierre Blanchard, an accomplished aeronaut and daredevil, breaking all sorts of distance and height records. He had a heart attack while in a tethered balloon next to his wife, and he fell out of the balloon and died. But after Jean-Pierre's death, Sophie continued to do aerial demos solo. She died when her hydrogen-filled balloon caught fire and crashed into a Parisian neighborhood. More than 100 years after that, a much different kind of balloon, an airship, crashed in the fields of Ohio.
Hi, my name is Kendall Crawford, and I'm a reporter for the Ohio Newsroom, and I have put myself on the blimp beat recently.
Well, Kendall, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You get to report on stories all across Ohio, but what happened more than 100 years ago on September 3rd, 1925, that brought you to the town of Ava, Ohio?
Yes. So Noble County, which holds Ava, Ohio, is a very rural area. And one of the goals of the Ohio Newsroom is to go to every county in the state. And so for a while, I'd been reading news in Noble County. And on September 3rd, like you mentioned, I read a story about a 100th anniversary of this airship crash, which I didn't expect in a headline at all.
The first American-built rigid was the ZR-1, or Shenandoah.
I learned about the history of the USS Shenandoah, which was this 608-foot-long rigid airship.
The Shenandoah was a particularly important ship, not because she was up to date, but because she was the first native-built, homegrown American rigid.
Which is kind of like, you know, what we call a blimp today, but instead of being all puffy, it's got like a steel frame around it and fabric covering it. And it was originally created for the purpose of being a U.S. Navy reconnaissance vessel.
The Shenandoah was the first rigid airship to moor to a floating mast, such as the U.S. Navy devised and installed on the tanker Patoka.
So its job would basically be to go out with the submarines and watch for enemies and anything dangerous and help the U.S. Navy in that mission. And at this time, it was also kind of seen as this really interesting innovation in aerospace. The U.S. Navy decides that they want buy-in for this program that they're working on for the airships, because the USS Shenandoah is one of the first ones. And so they send it out on a publicity tour, and it heads to the Midwest. And once it's en route to Ohio, a big storm comes, which was something that the captain was really worried about at the time. Like, he had thought about postponing it and requested a postponing because he knew about, like, summer squalls in the region.
The Shenandoah was lost in a line squall near Ava, Ohio, on September 3rd, 1925.
But unfortunately, they were still told to go out and do this trip. And in that storm, if you can imagine, something that's being buoyed by helium isn't going to do well in this intense rain, this really, really rough wind.
14 men, including Lieutenant Commander Zachary Lansdowne, were killed.
And so, unfortunately, the USS Shenandoah falls and it crashes right in Ava, Ohio, in Noble County, which is, like I said, southeast Ohio, very rural. A historian I talked to told me that it's probably very likely that a lot of the roads in Noble County hadn't seen automobiles yet. So those people had certainly, you know, maybe they'd seen an airplane if they were lucky, but they had never seen an airship like this.
More looking up right after this.
The big silverfish was over Ohio when she ran into a heavy storm. On the ground, farmers could hear her engines laboring in the gale. High above, Rosendahl and his comrades fought to save their ship. But they failed. The Shenandoah had broken in half, carrying 14 men to death.
Yeah, I mean, this is like only 22 years after the Wright brothers' flight, and this is a rural community. It probably was a very strange sight to wake up to. What was the reactions of the townspeople and the public when they saw this?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a devastating and a tragic wreck. 14 crew members of the 43 died. So the initial reaction was obviously to help these people, and I think people in Noble County were very generous. They were, you know, giving food out of their garden. They were covering the people who had passed away. And even in one instance, were able to rescue some crew members. But also, they were just so fascinated about what this was and what was sitting in their backyard, in their farm fields all of a sudden, that it became kind of like a county fair in a way. Like, everyone showed up to see the wreckage and to try to understand what had happened in this area. And so a lot of people ended up, you know, some would say looting from the site before it was guarded and protected. As one person told me, it would be like a giant, like, space shuttle coming down now and it not being, you know, guarded at all. Like, it's just so foreign to people that they really wanted a piece of it. These little scraps and pieces of, like, metal and rope and even a water basin have actually become family heirlooms for people in Ava. And those stories were just kind of, like, passed down from family member to family member.
Well, and then you met Teresa Rayner, who has established a mobile museum to the tragedy, kind of collecting all these pieces together. Tell us about her, like, her motivation and maybe some of the items and stories you found in the museum itself.
Yeah, she was such a wonderful person to meet. She was very positive. And the way she puts it is, like, she got married into caring about the USS Shenandoah.
Well, my husband, my late husband, is the one that got us involved. His grandfather, at one point in time, owned crash site 1 and 2, but not at the time of the crash.
Her late husband, Brian Rayner, grew up on a farm that was actually the site of the crash. He would spend his childhood, you know, like, scavenging his backyard for pieces of the crash and was able to find quite a few things. And then he and his family began collecting it, like, hearing about other people's heirlooms and convincing them to add them to his collection.
And finally, I told him, I said, you are going to wear this stuff out. Do something with it.
And they would travel together in this really small kind of beat up trailer.
It was heavy. It was hard to tow around. It served its purpose, though.
Just showing people all the things that they had collected and teaching about the history of the USS Shenandoah at the same time. And since he's passed, she's continued it on because it's just become such a big part of her life. And I think she doesn't want this forgotten, which is interesting because it's a sad story, really, and people died that day.
So these guys were pioneers, and I mean, they were doing something new and experimental. And then I thought, to think that it really happened right here in our backyard, I mean, it was a tragedy and lives were lost. But we've been told by pilots and other people involved in aviation that even though the lighter-than-air program through the Navy was not successful, there were things that were learned that has helped aviation down through the years.
She wants them to be remembered for those contributions.
So being inside the mobile museum, what were some of the individual artifacts that like kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting, the stories behind the artifacts.
Probably one of the last big items that were found out at the crash site were these buttons.
And when Teresa Rayner showed it to me, I was like, oh, it's a button. But it was off of like a naval uniform that someone actually found on the ship. And I also think a lot of the scraps of the wreckage that are there show the industriousness of the people in the community.
There's a piece of chain here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the note that came with it.
There was like a piece of metal like chain that she had on the wall. And I asked her about it. And she told me, you know, it's this part of the airship, but also it was used as a porch swing.
I guess some of the workers decided upon their own, they would just make some chains. And she said that was a piece that helped hold their porch swing up for years.
There was also instances of the like airtight fabric being used to fix lampshades.
Edna Nicholson, she lived in Cambridge, Ohio. And she said when their family had been at the crash site, she said they picked up some fabric.
In hard times, she had squirreled away this fabric that her family had passed down from the wreck, knowing that maybe, you know, maybe 100 years from now it might be valuable.
The day come that she needed some of it, she ripped all the old stuff off the lampshades and replaced it with material that they'd found off of the Shenandoah.
And there's also a legend. She didn't have any instances of this. And there's no family that's come forward to say that this is 100% true. But like the rumor has it that after the wreck, a couple years later in Caldwell, which is the county seat of Noble County, they actually had a tailor there making raincoats out of the reflective material because it was waterproof. And they called them the Shenandoah Slickers. But like I said, she was not able to locate any one of those raincoats. So,
oh man. Well, everybody out there that's listening, if you have a Shenandoah or Slicker, contact us, please. We would love to see it.
It would be really nice. I have a feeling that like a lot of these are still in people's attics and basements, just waiting to be found, you know, family boxes of memories.
At 4 o'clock one evening of a warm September day, a great and mighty airship from Lake Hurst flew away.
Well, Kendall, thanks so much for joining me today and kind of shedding some light on this little known aviation accident and a little bit more about the people that saw it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Boy, this sure did get me thinking about the alleged UFO crash in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
I mean, people saw the wreckage. People handled the wreckage. Mostly light metal and fabric, if reports can be believed. Now, I've taken my share of UFO reports over the years, you know, mysterious lights in the sky, mostly. Well, now that I think about it, those constitute each and every report I've ever gotten. I've never had anyone bring me a strange piece of metal or an alien alloy, and definitely not an alien body part or anything. So my optimistic side tells me that we in the 21st century are tougher to fool than those of the mid-20th century. All right, and then my pessimistic side says, oh yeah, the government is just better at hiding it. But my logical side, which now covers 90% of my brain, reasons you'd think that after almost 80 years, we haven't had another documented UFO crash anywhere in the world? Nothing since 1947. To my friends in Roswell, people I know and love, call me crazy, but I'm starting to have my doubts that a UFO crashed there. I'm not saying it was a balloon, but... Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan and Carlos Lopez Cornu produce and edit our show and wish that I would become an agent of the government so we can get better podcast equipment. Janelle Walton is our vice president of content, and Ronnie Salerno is our digital platforms manager. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran. Our social media coordinator is Hannah Flume, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.